possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point, and there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the RTE GAA podcast. Lots for us to get stuck into ahead of the weekend. Ryan McCluskey is going to join us a little bit later on to chat football, but Jackie Tyrrell is with us now to talk hurling. Kind of feels like do or die already at the early stage of the season, Jackie, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I suppose a few surprise results last weekend. And it's amazing.
Were they that much of a surprise though, Jackie? I mean, Jackie Tyrrell, like, was Waterford beating Cork a huge surprise? I don't know. Was it? Would you think?
I would say it was. I really would. I know when the team came out from Waterford, it kind of raised a few eyebrows as going, like, that's pretty strong. But listen, the backdrop of that is that Waterford had had a terrible round robin last year. The record at home is worse. They've had a dismal league. They've been relegated. The disgruntled locals, a lot of room. And so when you weigh that up, you kind of, Cork were favourites going in, and you expected Cork to win with, you know, Pat Ryan in the second year, a team that had pushed so close to getting to in the top three of Munster, which we know is a bear pit, and Waterford weren't even at the races last year. So for me, that all stacks up to a surprise. But one thing in hurling, you should never underestimate, particularly a David Fitzgerald team. So look, we've got burnt with that a few times and we continue to get burnt with it. But, you know, for me, it was a shock. It was a surprise. The manner in which they won by 3 points, they probably should have won 6-7 points, considering how dominant they were in that game. So when you stack that up, in my eyes, that's a bit of a shock.
Okay. I also think Clare, just the way they were going into it, Jackie, like, I mean, I know this is mad that they were the favourites against the All-Ireland champions, but I think people were expecting that Clare could and would win that game. So that one, in a way, is, okay, it's a much smaller shock because of who they are, but I still think people were probably tipping Clare for that one too.
Isn't it mad to think that Limerick are going for 5 in a row and we're, you know, it's an element of shock when Clare win. So that probably is kudos to John Kiely and how he's kept the hype train under control in Limerick. Once again, the momentum was with Clare going into it. But I suppose we probably really have to call down the league on where it was. And you know, I said after the league final, from a Kilkenny point of view, we'd know TJ Reid. We've copped up 3 softish enough goals. We missed a penalty. And still going down the straight, Clare were, you know, just about got over the line. So you had to kind of weigh that up. But, you know,
Kenny had been doing that for about 150 years.
I know, but still. Now, and in fairness to the Clare players after the league, you know, they all mentioned Limerick was just around the corner. They wouldn't be getting carried away. Yeah. Every player did. I watched, you know, very, very closely to the interviews. The narrative was very much, this is good. Good to get silverware, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter at all until they beat Limerick. And so they definitely didn't get carried away with themselves. But I suppose, you know, Limerick are just the masters of smelling an opportunity and going for blood then when they get the chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, lots of that to come this weekend. Let's start with Cork Clare game then, Rory, because this is a knockout game in every way. I'm sure it's going to annoy people that it's on GAA Go and that it's not on terrestrial TV, because I think if it was, you could have had over 400,000 people watching this, because that's the magnitude of this game. Huge knockout game this weekend.
It is. Now, you could make an argument that you could still get your 4 points and still get through. I think that's been turned on its head ever so slightly by the virtue of the fact that Waterford now have already got 2 on the board. Mm-hmm. So the bar to jump to get through to the next round could be slightly higher in this campaign. So if you lose, particularly from Cork's perspective, given the fact that they have Limerick after that, and, you know, look, that's then really would be putting the tin hat on it. At that stage, you know, I think from Clare, I mean, it's set up. It's going to be, from what I hear, close to 40,000 in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. There is only a small few terrace tickets left. It'll be absolutely rampacked. Weather is not meant to be great, unfortunately, even though, as my dad used to say, the sun always shines in Cork, it's just some days you don't see it. But Yeah, like I think it's set up in every way. But as I said to you on Monday, Jackie, Cork's record against Clare of late is atrocious. They have a very, very poor record on form. You couldn't see anything other than a Clare win. I mean, the reality is Clare on paper are a much stronger team than Watford. Now, the only thing that you could maybe flip on its head is that you're hoping that you see a better performance from Cork on Sunday. But from what personnel? Who's he going to pick? Can he take a chance in throwing the baby out with the bathwater and just going for broke? Maybe the Waterford game was the time to try that. Maybe he needs to stick with more of the tried and trusted this time round for experience and all that brings with it. But you just don't know. I mean, he's got a major dilemma. He's not going to have the opportunity to play a full contact A's versus B's because the match is Sunday. So you're kind of guessing really in terms of fishing around for body language and for what you might feel within the camp. I think, look, there are people locally in Cork who would have hoped to have seen, as we said, the likes of the Brian Roaches, Ben Cunningham's, maybe Brian Hayes to start, these types of players, and we haven't seen them. So
Owen Downey,
exactly. I mean, had a fantastic, Brian Roach started nearly all the round robin games last year and hasn't featured at all this year, which is a big surprise as well, Jackie. So he's got a selection dilemma. I think it's a bigger hill for Cork to climb, given the fact they're at home. The pressure, I think, is on them, because they're now in a position whereby they had a harrowing exit from the championship last year and we're not even out of April and already the championship could be over for 2024. That's a tough position now for Cork to be in. So I think Clare have a slightly more optimistic vista approach in this game.
Can I give you the other side of that, Jackie, right? Just to play devil's advocate. If you were sitting in the Cork dressing room, you would say their room for growth is much greater than Clare's because they were so outplayed last weekend and so off the pace that you would nearly say we have to do something alarming to get this right. Whereas Clare were at their absolute best in so many ways last weekend and they still didn't get the job done. So if you're an eternal optimist, which I'm sure lots of Cork people have probably had to become over the last number of years, you might still think, right, we know we can get there. We're miles off it last weekend. There's a huge room for growth here. Is that just optimism in it, or what do you think?
Look, that is a very optimistic approach, I'd say, Jackie. Yeah, there's huge room for growth, but they need to close that gap. And people in Cork aren't very patient. And if you think of it, they expect to be contesting for Munster Championships and for All-Irelands. And to think they could get bet this weekend, and if they get bet, by God, it's a long way back. You know, if Clare got bet, you could see them somehow getting back into it. If Cork get bet, God, I don't see it. I don't see where the results are going to come from. And I suppose from Clare's point of view, they hurled well for 55 minutes. They'll probably start Tony Kelly. There's some green shoots. They need to address what that collapse looked like and make sure it doesn't happen again. So there is something for them to build on. From Cork, you'd be kind of going, Alan Connolly played well. Tommy O'Connell, you know, put in a fair shift. Outside of that, lads,
Sean O'Donoghue, maybe. Sean O'Donoghue.
And Dara Fitzgibbon as well.
Yeah. But that's about
Dara
it, though.
Sorry. But where do we go with our three, we say, guys that are in their 30s as regards the three forwards that played in the All-Ireland 13? Do we roll the dice with one of them, two of them, three of them? Do we clean slate and put three new guys in? What do we do with the centre of our defence that just, you know, for Jamie Barron's goal, there was no centre of defence. Damien Cahillane got sent off. It was probably Kieran Joyce's poorest performance. So I'd like to think that down in Cork, there's a ratty environment in that dressing room. And you'd like to think that they're trying to make Parky Cueva fortress this weekend. The people of Cork should be out and make sure. If it reminds me kind of like Tipperary last year when it came to Parky Cueva, that kind of bit of hostility there, that bit of anger, that has to come out in the Cork players this week. It really, really has to, because last week was just not good enough. For Clare, wasn't good enough, but at least they performed for three quarters of that game. So I think this is huge. It's monumental for Clare. They lose this weekend. They didn't make a round robin last year. Probably not going to qualify this year. And there'll be serious questions asked. And, you know, it's getting to the situation, which is scary, that Crow Park, you know, Cork used to be in there nearly every weekend. It might be there for another year.
Yeah. And Jackie, I do think it is a Jackie Terrell makes absolutely fair point. Are you a, like, Cork have to ask themselves the question, are we a serious inter-county team or not? And if you are, at some stage, you're going to have to stand up. And I think from their point of view, they're going to go in there this weekend now. Most people will fancy Clare to get the job done. But I think, like, another season goes by. Your career goes past you very, very, very quickly. The one small shoot of optimism that I would harbour is they still only lost the match last weekend by 3 points, right? After being outplayed largely. So they did show some gumption to stick in there, despite being down to 13 players for the key part of the game. Mm-hmm. So there is fighting qualities. Is there enough quality to turn Clare over? Not sure.
Well, that's the question.
Can I ask one question? How many hurling clubs are in Cork?
Good question.
A lot.
I do know GAA clubs, there's about 247 or 200, just under 250. And that's excluding LGFA and Camogie. When you add them in, it's nearly 400 clubs in the whole county. But hurling only, I'd say you probably should still be looking at upwards of about 150, I'd say.
Yeah, easily.
How in 14 years have Cork not got a fullback that they can rely on? I can't. It beggars belief in 14 years that fullback position is a revolving door. And this isn't a cut at Damien Callahan. He has gone in there and done a very, very good job at times and has got a lot of stick for it. But I can't understand in 14 years in Cork hurling with good underage success coming through that fullback position. We're still questioning and talking about who's going to be fullback. And it just, maybe for me, it seems like that I just can't get my head around. But, like, how come Dermot O'Sullivan hasn't? And I know he was in there nearly almost going around the county scavenging, looking for a fullback, getting 10 or 12 potential candidates, working on them outside of the group, some sort of a development thing. This is the type of thing that they probably need to be doing because it's a problem for them and it doesn't seem to be addressed. And it's one that's gaping that everyone can see, but I can't understand how it hasn't been fixed.
No one wants to be a fullback anymore. Like, yeah. what was Jamie Carragher's line? No one wants to be a Gary.
No one's a Gary. But if you look at the weekend, the value of having a dominating fullback, yeah, and Conor Cleary is a good one, but he had a poor game the weekend and how he dealt with that. If you had a good fullback there, Clare probably get out the gap. If Wexford have a dominating fullback, they're out the gap. So it's an unbelievably important position to fill. And there's definitely a shortage of them around the country.
Justice for the full back line, says Jackie Terrell. Right. Come here. Okay, a word on Clare before we move away from that game, because I do think, Jackie, they will be bullying with the weekend's performance. You know, as we said earlier, they did everything right for 55 minutes. They were in complete control of the game. They look like potential All-Ireland champions. So what goes wrong and how do they fix it this week? Because one small change, they win this game and suddenly everybody's saying, oh yeah, actually everything's grand again. You know, they do not need to panic here. We definitely saw enough chinks of light there to say that this Clare team are really, really going places.
Yeah, I'd say the big thing for them is leadership and on-field management of the game. And it's probably not something that has come to light before. In fairness, they do have leaders within the group. There's no doubt about it. I would feel that when Dermot Burns got that goal and there was a bit of ascendancy with Limerick, that they struggled. They struggled to win ball. They struggled zonally. They lost their shape at the defence. And Garrod Hegarty's gaping hole that he found was a perfect example of that. So I'd say Brian Lowen was saying, look, lads, there's going to come a time in this Cork game where they're on top, we'll be under pressure. Who are the leaders that are going to step up? What tactically can we do? You know, they were getting great merit out of Peter Duggan in the air, but they seem to go away from that in that last quarter. Can they come up with something as regards isolating him for puckouts, just to win ball, maybe win a free, just hold up the ball? Those are the type of things that they need to work on when Cork come at them, when their backs are to the wall. And they haven't long to repair that. So a lot of those is going to be in-house meeting, one-on-one meetings with Brian Lowen. I'm saying his leadership group of Conor Cleary, John Conlon, Peter Duggan, Tony Kelly. I'm sure he'll feature Shane O'Donnell. He's talking to those lads. Lads, when this happens, I need you to step up. I need you to communicate to the younger lads. I need to hear you getting amongst the guys and just turning that momentum down and just bringing a bit of stalemate, because when Limerick got on top, it was just free flow.
Mm. Yeah. I can't wait for that game. I think that's the game of the weekend for me. Yeah. But let's focus on some of the other ones then. Limerick, Rory, I think given where they were and where they are now, John Kiely has to be the lucky, happy, all of these emotions, because he's facing into a game against Tipperary. If they get another win this weekend, their own kind of destiny is in their own hands. You know, they're thinking, okay, right, we're moving on, next phase. Yes, lots to correct, and they certainly were not at their best, but at least they have a win on the board and they can only improve from what we saw last weekend.
Big time. And I think the nice dilemma for John Kiely really is around selection.
Mm.
And the great thing for him is even the players that might have not performed the last day, no, he has a history of being very loyal to these players, and you'd imagine he'll stick with Shamey Flan and potentially Tom Morrissey, but he might not. Adam English, what did Adam English do wrong to not merit inclusion from the start the next day out? Donegh O'Dolig, I mean, you know, he comes on, he scores 1-1 and effectively, you know, changes the course of the game. So he will definitely, John has a bit of a luxurious task really, where he's sitting down. He's got a really good win on the board away from home. They've now got a Tipperary that look a little out of sorts coming to town. They always love playing Tipperary, even when Limerick weren't at their best. They always enjoyed and relished the task of playing Tipperary. There's a special rivalry between those two teams. Could you see?
Yeah,
I didn't want to say it.
That is special, though.
It's a special one, right? But like, I mean, I don't necessarily see a situation this time around. I mean, people, you know, Aaron Gillan, people say, oh, he didn't have his best game. He still scored 1-5. Seamus Flanagan taken off early. Tom Morrissey taken off early. I'd expect a better game maybe from Declan Hannan this time round. They'll potentially start the game a lot quicker. I mean, they had a great start the last time, last Sunday, in fairness to them. It was just that middle period in the first half where Clare seemed to get a foothold. But Cian Lynch, for instance, didn't really fire. They expected, like, I think the engine is going to start purring a lot more now, and that's going to
I think it's going to have to, right? Because the only fear that you have with them...
It's a big challenge for Tip now.
Yeah, but the only fear that you'd have with them, and I put this to Bodhi, that, like... We were chatting about this even last weekend, Jackie. You know, we were watching the game off air, and I said to you at around 55 minutes, I was like, can you name me a Limerick player who's played well? And in fairness, Cian Lynch thundered into it into the last 15 minutes. But like, would you be a bit concerned, like if you were watching now and you're sitting there, that those big players that Rory's mentioning, that they haven't played well?
I would go the opposite. I would say John Kiely's extremely unhappy. And why I say that is that, look, they had, and quote him, their worst top two or three worst performances ever against Kilkenny in the league semi-final. And that happens.
Mm.
You know, teams do that. Great teams do that. Poor teams do that. What you do, you look for a reaction. They had a three-week window to get themselves ready for Clare. It was perfect. Clare went on and won the league final. All the talk and hype was them. They circled their wagons down in Limerick, and I'm sure they went to war with each other getting ready for it. So you expect a reaction. You expect leadership and all that. We didn't see any of that for 55 minutes. Mm. So I would say that's two poorest performances probably, and the two poorest performances back-to-back for Limerick. So I'd say from John Kiley's kind of going, right, I expected a reaction. We still got the win, but I didn't see it. And a lot of my top key players... Mm. Dermot Burns didn't perform. Tom Morrissey, Seamus Flanagan, Aaron Gillan, although he got his 1-5.
They did an awful lot of fouling.
Yeah.
Look, but he got away with it, you know.
Well, they didn't. I mean, like, they conceded a huge amount from frees, didn't they?
Oh, sorry,
like,
Limerick did. Oh, sorry. So a lot of his key guys. So I'd say he's a little worried from that point of view. Great, look, we played poorly, and that's a real mark of champions, getting the 2 points on the board and moving on. So I'd say, but deep down, he's a little concerned that that's two back-to-back poor performances. And some of the key guys didn't perform well within that. But look, the other side of it is they won. He now has a stick to beat his lads with. As Rory's outlined, the guys that are potentially putting their hand up, Peter Casey may be back in the fray soon enough. So he's something else as well. So look, he can kind of go hard at him and say, look, that's not good enough. I know we just about got over the line, but that was more to Clare's demise than actually us actually stealing the game back when you think of Dermot Burns' goal. So I'd say he'd be a little concerned, Jackie.
Mm. Is there more pressure on them because of the five in a row thing, Jackie? Is it when you're not playing well and everybody's saying, oh, but you're not playing well, it's another bad performance, it's another. Does it make it worse having that hanging over them as well? Or is that just a complete separate distraction?
No, there's no doubt about it. There's a little extra pressure with five in a row. It just comes with the territory. It's just an organic thing that fabricates. As soon as they win four in a row, the Monday afterwards, they were in Limerick having a pint or whatever, people start talking about five in a row. And that will build and build and build over the Christmas period, into the year, into the league. And as soon as championship starts, it'll hype up a little bit more. And particularly if they win more and more. If they win this weekend, or if they beat Tipperary, they kind of have third place ramped up. They're back in Croke Park and they are very hard to beat in Croke Park. And they'll go to another level. So they will. They will have started to feel that pressure ever so slightly. And especially when you're searching for form for some of those guys, you know, and sometimes training isn't the answer. The more you train, the more frustrated you can get because things aren't going your way. Sometimes it's just a reset, or sometimes it's just a win that you just dig out of nowhere, and suddenly, to Rory's point, you just feel the engine is beginning to purr a small bit. So it'll be interesting to see this weekend. Do we see a bit more of a flow and the old Limerick coming back? I suspect we might.
Yeah, be interesting to see what Tip throw at the party as well this weekend, who've been
very interesting.
Quietly.
Like Shane McGrath making the point today, Jackie, on the RT website, that it would be easier to predict the weather than pick the Tip starting 15, which is really, like, I mean, he was saying, like, outside of, I think the three players he mentioned were Willie Connors, Ronan Maher, and Jake Morris. And outside of that, maybe Mikey Breen. Outside of that, he said you really wouldn't know what 15, what lineup, what way. Now, maybe that brings an element of surprise, but there's also
an element of
uncertainty.
To tip people.
Yeah, but there's also an element of uncertainty. You know, they might be searching for something, and the Gaelic grounds is not the greatest of places to be going looking for stuff.
Yeah, well, we'll be all interested and eagle-eyed in watching that one. What about the Leinster Championship then? Because I think this battle between Galway and Kilkenny, it's hard to tell at this time of the year what we're going to get from them, Jackie, because everybody's saying in all likelihood we're going to be seeing them playing again potentially in a Leinster final. No disrespect to any of the other teams involved, but I guess it's just how they approach this. If you're in Henry's position, are you thinking we've got to win this one, we've got to lay down a marker, we've got to instill some belief, or is he still trying to find the players, find everything? How does he approach this?
I think it's Henry will be going for this all guns. I'd say you'll see an awful lot stronger of a team. I'd say you'll see all his starters coming out this weekend. It's Salt Hill at home. I think he'll want, because the way Leinster is, you know, how many acid tests are they going to get? Because they kind of need to win a Leinster final this year. So you probably look at Dublin, you look at Wexford, and you probably look at Kilkenny. You put a ring around Kilkenny and say, look, we're going to get a battle. We're going to get a test. I need to find out about my Gavin Lees, my Declan McLaughlins of this world, generally the new guy. So I'd say he'll be putting all them out, lads, and saying, look, lads, places are up for grabs here. Let's see what you can do. Kilkenny are coming to town to Salt Hill, and I think he'll be putting a huge amount of merit. Now, look, there's serious question marks over Owen Cody and Adrian Mullen, and the talk is that they won't tug out this weekend. So Kilkenny, likewise for Derek, it'll be a chance for him. Owen Wall came on the weekend, scored 2-2. Imagine he might get some game time this weekend. Billy Drennan might feature as well. So I think it'll be saucy enough now, Sowell.
Mm. That's a nice way to describe it, Rory, isn't it? Saucy. Yeah. I think everybody would look forward to a bit of that this weekend if they got it.
Yeah, and like they generally do deliver very good contests, even in the round robin stages. We've seen some incredible games, whether it was like they finished level on a couple of occasions. There was a handshake that made the headlines on one famous occasion. I think Galway were the first team to go to Nolan Park and get a championship win in probably since the turn of the last century. So, like, they generally do produce good contests between them. I think from Henry's perspective, I mean, the one thing I was looking at, and I didn't obviously see the game, but one against Carlo, they conceded 2-14. Now, you'd have to give Carlo huge credit on that. And by all accounts, Carlo played really well for patches. But Galway named, I mean, they had Dahi Burke, Fintan Burke, Jack Grealish, and Parik Mannion in the defence. That'll be four, certainly, at their starting six. And, you know, Carlo were able to still rack up a big score. Now, obviously, the absence of Owen Cody and Adrian Mullen takes a bit of the artillery away from Kilkenny, and that might necessarily be as troublesome or worrying or concerning for Henry as it ordinarily would be. But I think, this is a great opportunity for both teams to really test themselves and see where they are. The reality is they'll probably be meeting again in a Leinster final. And who knows? Mm. Could be in for a trilogy that side of the house as well.
Is Johnny Glynn the kind of surprise you'd land in, Jackie, against a Kilkenny? I mean, I don't think he would have brought him back in if he didn't intend on playing him. A lot of people thought they might see him last weekend. Is this the kind of weekend you'd like to see him playing?
Yeah, you would, I suppose, because there's no doubt about there's questions over how up to speed is he? How is he physically? I know he played football in New York, so you'd imagine he has a reasonable fitness level. Henry, as you say, wouldn't have brought him back if he didn't see something in him. It's just probably Henry's call. Is he at a pitch where he's ready for Kilkenny? Because you don't want to throw him into a game where he's not ready and maybe take it into his confidence. But Johnny Glynn is a very unique character in his ball winning ability. Have no doubt about it.
Did you ever come up against him, Jackie?
I did, and I was just about to tell a story.
Oh, sorry.
2012, he came on the All-Ireland. Was it the first day or the second? I'd never really heard of him. Knew he was a big lump of a fella. So I welcomed him with a shoulder. I'd say he was probably 19 or 20 at the time. And he ended up on the ground. And he was just kind of looking down at me. And I was like, where is this lad after coming? He was just absolutely made of muscle. I totally didn't know what I was getting myself into. So thanks be to God, there was only about 10 minutes left in the game and the ball didn't come in. But this lad's strength is off the charts. Like, this guy, I remember when he was full forward on Paddy Maher, he caused wreck. He gave JJ enough trouble in the air. This lad's balling ability, I would put up in the top probably 4 or 5 in the country with TJ, probably Peter Duggan. His balling ability, his strength is unbelievable. Now, look, his hurling at times leaves a lot to be desired, but what do Galway need? Ball winners. You can imagine the likes of Conor Whelan just buzzing off this. So if he's anywhere right, you definitely, if you don't start him, you give him a good half if he's
edge of the square.
Oh, edge of the square and let it in with snow on.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm thinking, Rory, because if you're Galway, right, and you're trying to find, what do I need? What's the extra factor? What would have helped us over the line against Kilkenny in a Leinster final last year? What would have helped us over the line in an All-Ireland final last year? Ball winners, dogs. That's what Kilkenny need. That's what Galway need. And I would argue that maybe that's what they have lacked over the last number of years. There's no doubt about it. Johnny Glynn is one of them, and he would make a massive difference to that team at full tilt.
At full tilt, that's the key. Full tilt, you'd probably have to question whether, firstly, as Jackie Terrell mentioned, whether or not his hurling is sharp enough and up to speed. Secondly, whether or not he's 70 minutes in him. But if you're Henry Shefflin, for instance, and you have an opportunity to play a two-man inside line, which will give you the opportunity to drift out, and you can put Conor Whelan and Johnny Glynn in there as a Laurel and Hardy, I mean, that gives you some options to just be extremely direct. And I know Henry enjoys a direct game because, look, that's exactly the way Jackie's team would have played it. But I doubt he's got 70 minutes in him. It's probably 20, 25 minutes to go. Things might have slowed down a wee bit. I don't think he was named in the panel the last day out. So maybe they're holding him back. Be very interesting to see him this weekend, and if he went in there up against Hugh Lawler, that'd be a good test now, just to see where he is.
And imagine the lift that it gives to Salt Hill, Johnny. Oh. It's like, top of the sun coming home and things like that.
Well, if he's togged out, we'll spot him anyway. That's for sure.
You can't miss him. Yeah. And I'd say the first ball that a Galway half back against, everyone's like, just let him down and let Hugh wrestle for it. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, let him in. Let it in. Let the games begin, lads. We're going to have to leave it there. Really looking forward to it. It's going to be a cracking weekend of hurling. And here's hoping Cork are still standing at the end of the weekend, Rory. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Okay, lads, we'll leave the hurling. Jackie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, lads.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
Okay, welcome to the football part of today's RTGA podcast. And unfortunately, Jackie Hurley has been inadvertently called away. So it's myself and Ryan that are going to take you through the weekend's football action for the next 20 minutes or so. And given the blockbuster weekend we had last weekend, it's probably fair to assume that maybe this weekend mightn't deliver as much drama on the field, Ryan. But at the same time, there's still plenty to chew over and nothing quite as big as Donegal-Tyrone.
Yeah, and in all fair, we had discussed about the importance, and it was great to see the good weather back as well. Maybe that is our summer all in weekend, or one weekend, sorry. But I think it just, you know, the games last weekend, I think the players were excited, you know, clearly that we had some dry ball and dry conditions, and they weren't sludging through muck, dirt and whatever else for games as well. And yeah, we have a couple of brilliant encounters. You know, we have a derby, obviously, in Armagh and Down, and then we have obviously the Tyrone Donegal game, and I suppose that's probably the game of the weekend that stands out with, I suppose, a rampant and resurgent Donegal side playing a Tyrone team that just are so inconsistent, and we really don't know what's going to turn up at the weekend in terms of Tyrone, and we, you know, we looked at last weekend's game and clearly, you know, from a position of you know clear ascendancy, yeah, they ended up then, you know, nearly losing the game against Cavan as well. And for me, that has kind of summed up, yes, their kind of pattern of play the whole season in terms of how they've conducted themselves as well. So, you know, it will be interesting, and let's hope for good weather this weekend again.
Well, I don't know if we're going to get it. By all accounts, it's not meant to be great, which is, you know, look, I suppose anyway, that's just that's Sod's law at this stage. I think from a Donegal perspective, though, Ryan, the transformation has been remarkable. They played Tyrone in the championship last year, lost, I don't know, was it 7 or 8 points, and it was a prelim quarterfinal. And obviously got relegated from Division 1. Now, already this year, they have won Division 2. I would suggest at their ease. And they have targeted, obviously, the game against Derry in a big way, delivered. And the surge of electricity in terms of belief and confidence, I'm sure that will deliver into their bodies ahead of this weekend. But like, people throw, you know, bandy terms around like genius and this type of stuff. But he is an incredibly fascinating character, Jim McGuinness. And he does have to take a huge amount of the credit for this turnaround, would you believe?
Yeah, and if you look at just his backroom team and who he had assembled, sorry, as well, with McGee in there and Steve Toys in there as well. You know,
very McFadden. Colin McFadden's,
yeah,
in there.
All right. Yeah, he has, you know, established a group of players that I suppose are admired as well by that kind of current group that are in there as well. But listen, we knew from the off at the start of the year it was very probably Mourinho-like, I might say. I heard I read an interview during the week about John Terry, and he was saying about Mourinho liking, you know, his sides to kind of build a wall them against kind of the world. And I believe he has done that straight away in Donegal. Whether it's true or not, you know, we heard rumours of him, putting up a fence around the training camp and, you know, doing stuff like this to really enclose and kind of get that probably mentality of us against the world. And there's not too much coming out of Donegal, you know, and the best sides, when obviously they're in their pump, you don't really hear too much as well about them. So credit to not just him, you know, the whole backroom team as well. And he has, listen, he's captured that spirit of Donegal again. And we know, I mean, you know, they have talented players, and you just have to look through their team and their squad to see the quality there as well. But you know, he has revitalised that group of players, and you're right, if you look at last year and where they were and compared to this season, yeah, he's made massive strides in a short period of time. We knew he was going to come in and work on their fitness. He knew he was going to raise standards. But now it just looks like, yeah, he's brought that psychologically, warfare that I suppose any side needs to attack any type of championship game, let alone the Ulster Championship as well. So, it's something at the weekend that I'm sure everybody will tune into, especially after to seeing their demolition of Derry as well.
You mentioned defence, which I think is an interesting an interesting anecdote or subplot. Have you ever been to Convoy, by the way?
No, I haven't. No,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I've been up there a couple of times down through the years filming interview pieces, and back in the day we used to do video walk-ons, so you would have had to go up there to their training camp and get access to the players for half an hour, 40 minutes. Why he felt the need to build a fence in this place, I have no clue, because it is in the middle of absolutely nowhere. So I don't know who he was trying to keep out. But look, I think it does feed into a level of professionalism that I think he was going to bring. And I do find him a fascinating character. But the challenge this Sunday is going to be different, no doubt, Ryan, I would imagine, given the fact that the fixture against Derry would have been burnt into their brains from the very time that draw was made. They now, so that's going back, I don't know, 6-7 months when the draw was made. They now have 6-7 days to turn around to face a very different challenge in Tyrone. So what, you know, how do you reset for something like that?
I suppose even before we get to that, you know, I have to mention, you know, I think it's crazy that the game's in Celtic Park. You know, the scramble for tickets, we're already, you know, talking about that definitely here in Ulster. You know, it's kind of hot ticket and hot property at the moment. I think Celtic Park holds about 15,000. So you know, we're trying to promote our games. And I know we did talk about this a number of weeks ago as well. You know, and these are the kind of key games. Key moments in your summer, and you want big crowds at the games. Players, you know, they absolutely love playing it, you know, in big crowds, and it's something you cherish those moments as well. And that would be wanted by, I'd say, both sides as well. So I think that's a bit crazy, first and foremost. In terms of the reset button for the weekend, you know, and we have as well, sorry, I kind of keep going back, we have argued about, you know, players kind of playing, you know, week on week, and having this split season, and because it's so condensed, you know, games coming thick and fast. But I suppose from a playing perspective, the longer you kind of sit around, the longer your head is in turmoil, kind of thinking about it as well. However, I suppose you have that bit more time in terms of preparation as well. And I suppose like anything else, that the players will acclimatise and get used to what they've been doing. They have been playing week on week, most weeks anyway, you know, in terms of the National League as well. So their bodies will, you know, will recover. They will repair. The argument may be, listen, that Donegal had that extra day. And obviously Tyrone played that extra time as well. So, but listen, there's that much sports science as well, Rory, involved in today's modern game, that, you know, I have no doubt that 30 minutes, even straight after the games, that the players would have been refueling correctly to allow that repair and the body to start that recovery process. And their week would have been based on that as well. And listen, also, you know, this is why sides, you know, carry big squads as well, you know. So Tyrone will certainly look forward to the game as well. I know they will be bolstered as well by Fergal Logan's return, and it was brilliant to see that he was back as well, you know, after his unfortunate kind of he had to leave the game for the while as well. So it's great to see him back in the sidelines. I just feel that we say that inconsistency in Tyrone, you know, that is something that you probably can't even really plan for. I know that sounds a bit mad as well. So Donegal will probably come up and face a different prospect this weekend, because we just don't know which Tyrone side's going to kind of turn up as well. And Cathal McShane came on the last day. It was nice to see his re-emergence. You know, we haven't really seen loads of him since, I suppose, 2021 as well, in that All-Ireland final when he was hot property when he came back, didn't travel to the AFL. So we just don't know. We just don't know which Tyrone's going to turn up. And just think that element alone will make it a fascinating encounter.
They have some injuries, Tyrone. They were missing the likes of Peter Hart and Cormac Quinn, Conkle Patrick. Obviously didn't tug out the last day. Might have a couple of those guys back. We'll find out when the teams are announced later. You mentioned the word inconsistency, and I think that's really very much what their league campaign has, up and down performances, and probably very dependent and heavily dependent on Dara Canavan. In terms of matchups this weekend, obviously, I think Brendan McColl now was a sort of a help defence that Donegal employ in terms of snuffing out Shane McGuigan. Would you see him picking up potentially Dara Canavan this weekend?
Yeah, and I think listen, they'll go after probably a number of key men in terms of Donegal. And obviously, listen, if the two Canavans play, I think they'll be both
tagged
heavily, you could say, marked as well. And then, you know, you look back to last weekend, you know, and Donegal got a lot right. You know, they went after some of Derry's key men. They nearly marked McHaig instead of McHaig, you know, the other way around, doing a man marking job. And they got the matchups right on him and tried to expose him at times and isolate him. The likes of Rogers, I know, was heavily, you could say, checked in certain areas. So he couldn't make those marauding runs, I suppose, up and down the pitch as well. And you're right, McColl had a fantastic job on McGuigan. So, you know, I expect them to get their matchups. But, you know, just the sheer pace they broke it last weekend, you know, a number of their counter-attacks, you know, you could just see streams of men, you know, just going and running forward. And as much as, you know, we talk about their physical fitness, you know, it clearly has improved. There's still a hunger and desire that has to come with that as well, you know, and that's clearly been installed into these players as well, because listen, there's probably not much between most county teams in terms of, you know, physical kind of, yeah, strengths and weaknesses, so to speak. You know, it's probably more that kind of skill set and desire and hunger inside that kind of, yeah, separates the elite and who is going to, you know, ultimately prevail and win, you know, these big encounters as well. So, but you're just looking at that Donegal side and you look at them even last weekend. Gallen, for me, was absolutely exceptional last weekend, you know, and I think the ability to turn on both sides. You know, he's really excelled over the last number of weeks as well, and obviously we knew about Brennan. So again, you know, what more do we have to say about Patton as well? It was crazy on Derry's behalf to try and press, you know, and press a lot of numbers against a keeper that, let's call a spade, two steps, and you know, Patton can kick it 60 yards. Probably the only person in the country that can kick it maybe 50 to 60 yards. And that is so hard to read, you know, as a player playing against that. And for me, it showed just a bit of a chink maybe in Derry's armour in terms of, you know, they overcommitted numbers. And if you look at that, you know, in most long kickouts, you know, they just made peace with it. He was taking probably 8, 9, 10 players completely out of the game, yeah. You know, and making them just redundant. So you know, he has the ability to do that. I don't think any other keeper in the country can do that, but that is an unbelievable weapon when it comes to that level as well.
Yeah, it certainly is, and it does give them a massive, as you said, a massive weapon and something in their artillery that not a lot of goalkeepers have and not a lot of teams have. I kind of felt Donegal would win the Ulster Championship this year because I thought that was something that Jim McGuinness would target in a big way. That's who I went for our first day out. And I fancy them to get the job done, just to think the freshness this weekend. How do you see it?
I just would have to go for Donegal. For me, from a structural point of view, I think there's more clarity in what they do in terms of you can see them with a real, I suppose, attention to detail. And you know, they are so compact. I think they've learned a lot even from, I go back to the Fermanagh game, albeit in the league. And at times, you know, I thought Fermanagh exposed them quite a bit in the game. I know we talked about that in a previous podcast in terms of they were easily exposed down the middle. Fermanagh created a lot of chances in that game, especially in the first half before Donegal pulled away. And for me, they were happy to mark, you know, players wide, and they were marking width, which you can't really do in the modern game as well, you know, and they were marking players kind of for the sake of marking players, and that was leaving gaps down in the pitch. You know, there was no evidence of that at the weekend, you know, and as I said, that ferocious counter-attacking, you know, ability that they contained as well. But listen, they were clever on the ball as well. You've got to credit them. You know, when they took the lead, they showed like a team that you know, had been at the top table, you know, a long time. You know, they showed that composure to retain possession, to look for, a mismatch or a Derry player to, jump in, and they beat them 1-1. And then it just outnumbered the opposition whenever they were attacking then. So, you know, there's massive improvements in the game. And, you know, let's look at the other side of the draw. You're probably looking at I would say, a Donegal and Armagh final, so that could be interesting also.
A repeat of the Division 2 final and a third meeting already this year between the two teams. And I think they drew in their round-robin game during the league in the Athletic Grounds. It was a good game of football, which I think Donegal might have felt they left behind them. Obviously, Armagh had a bit of a virus in the Division 2 final, but they've got to get over Down first. They're big history between Armagh and Down would be a sort of significant rivalry. A lot of lads, you know, going to the same schools, playing their club football, maybe cross border and that type of thing. Could you give us a sense? Because, like, you know, like, you would have grown up not too far from that, but you'd have a better idea than most of us would have of the sort of traditions and the rivalry between Armagh and Down.
Yeah, and I suppose we looked at some of the current stats as well, and I know Down have only won, I think, one encounter over the last kind of five championship campaigns against Armagh, and you're completely correct. You know, they're our schools in and around kind of Lurgan, and I think it's in Coleman's as well, possibly. Maybe I'm wrong there. But there
Coleman's
are a lot
Newry,
of
Coleman's and Newry, like a lot of Armagh lads would go to Coleman's and Newry.
So there's a lot of lads that would kind of overlap in those schools. However, I suppose Liffey McCrory football now has changed as well, in terms of a lot of vocational schools and secondary schools, you could say, now have entered into McCrory football as well. So that kind of changed that dynamic of McCrory football as well. But you're completely right, Corey, in terms of a lot of lads could have been probably at schools together. It might be an interesting piece to run for somebody at the weekend to see how many lads had maybe been in the same schools as well. So I think it's Abbey CBS about there as well. I think that's another school where a lot of those players would be kind of, in the same schools as well. So Armagh, for me, listen, you know, to have that experience, it was a game against Fermanagh, let's call it spade a spade. And I know it kills me to say this, that they probably could never win. You know, I did watch the game back a couple of times in frustration and anger, I suppose, as well, but, you know, they were so dominant. They were so dominant in that first quarter that it probably was the case. And I know they did make changes as well, you know, throughout the game as well. The black card we can have arguments against, but, you know, I could only really see one winner as well, you know, in that game. And I talked about Fermanagh trying to stifle their kicking game by being compact and trying to nullify, you know that space. But they attacked so well down the wings that day, and I don't think anyone picked up on that as well, you know. And they, I think Fermanagh did sit back and were quite compact, but they just attacked them down the wings. And they like Turbot, and Grugan, like, they're clever players. Grugan can pick a pass, and he was just unlocking the door a number of times as well. And I think he got man of the match as well in that game. And it was brilliant then to see this, and like Serena O'Neill back as well. For me, you know, what will hopefully and you'll probably see prevail for them, probably is that experience and you know those players that, you know, have been to the well now a number of times. It's probably you know do or die for them. And Rory Grugan did come out on a piece during the week, and he said, listen, you know, it's the healthiest squad that he has had with this Armagh team. And yeah, that their A's versus B's so-called games and training have been probably as competitive as a lot of their games this season. So there's a real, you know, you feel just from even some of those statements, there's a real hunger and desire there. And, you know, you have that experience as well. So, you know, for me, I just see them being dominant at the weekend and really, putting down to the sword.
Yeah, the Down were very disappointed, obviously, in their quarter-final victory over Antrim. They would need to have a huge improvement in their performance to have any hope to actually win the game. I do see it being slightly more competitive, Ryan, like in relation to Down's ability to compete, for instance. I think will be a marked improvement. They will, you know, they should improve on their championship performances last year. And but ultimately you're going for an Armagh victory Saturday, obviously 5:15 in Clonus. I think it's live on GAA. Go Armagh for you.
Armagh for me, and again, I suppose this is Down kind of real litmus test in terms of where are they at. You know, are they going to stand up to, I know we talked about physicality earlier on, but, you know, Armagh are an exceptionally big side as well. You know, I don't know if there's too many players under maybe 6 foot, maybe Jamar Hall, who has been in and out of squads as well of late, but they are a seriously, you know, big physical side that like to dominate you all over the pitch in terms of, I wouldn't say bullying either, but they certainly, you know, do enjoy being quite physical and, you know, putting a marker down. And so you can't be bullied by them. You know, you have to obviously match that kind of desire and fire, I suppose, as well against them. So Down need to improve. You know, it wasn't probably one of their better performances against Antrim. Albeit, you know, it was a 4 or 5 point win on that occasion as well. So, you know, it is a real test for them at the weekend. But unfortunately, I only see one winner in Armagh.
Moving on to Leinster and two games in Croke Park on Sunday, both live on GA Go. Again, GA Go was flat to the mat this weekend. But I would have potentially liked fixture makers to be slightly more imaginative on this one and maybe have started the day with Dublin against
Offaly,
because look, the reality is, I don't know if we have to spend too much time on that game, Ryan, in terms of how that game is going to map itself out. Because ultimately, I think the really key game here is Kildare versus Louth, and there's something really tangible on the line here. Like if Kildare, if Kildare can win this game, they're chasing their Sam Maguire status, and that's not an insignificant thing.
Yeah, and it has been a topic of many conversations over you know, our podcast, even over the last number of weeks and possibly months. You know, on. I suppose their form in the league and how it could be rescued by them probably reaching, that latter championship phase as well and getting into that championship format. I'm not overly still convinced. They clearly struggled the last day against Wicklow and it was a last gasp winner as well. I think it was the 4th minute of injury time when they scraped through the game. Albeit, I know Kevin Flynn, I think he got sent off around half-time maybe as well. So, you know, the numerical advantage is massively important in today's game as well, in terms of just attacking and defending as well. But for me, again, Louth have showed a real bit of form over the last kind of number of weeks. Jared Brennan, you know, back in the Leinster final against the old, county and hunting ground, you know, that probably whets the appetite a bit more than maybe Kildare getting there. But you have to give them credit as well, you know, and it's not to discredit Wicklow as well. That performance the last day, you know, Wicklow, battled to the death as well and should have and maybe could have won it at the end of the game. I think it was a missed chance at the end. Possibly by, I think it was Nolan maybe actually in for Wicklow, and then the turnaround, they went down the pitch, sorry, and got that winning score with 4 minutes on the injury time clock as well. But for me, Louth, we look at Mulroy and the confidence that was brimming from him the last day. I don't know if Mulroy, you might be able to help me out here. If a player has scored 2 penalties in 1 game, you're usually good with the stats.
Jesus,
I'm not sure if that happened in game time, in real game time, obviously, as well.
Well, if you're looking for it to have happened for somebody, you'd nearly be saying Dublin. You know, did David Connolly do it once upon a time? I'm not entirely certain, but I wouldn't imagine it's happened all that often. And he took two very different types of penalties as well, which is, which is more of a mark of how professional a job he was.
Yeah.
He did, you know.
And you have the likes of Downey was exceptional that day. I think he got man of the match. You have Kieran Keenan, Dernan as well. They have a lot of quality and a lot of attacking options up front. They are well used to big enough encounters over the last number of years. Obviously, getting to the Leinster final last year, they'll be looking to get back into that showpiece again. Again, if we're going to call it, and I'm going to call it and put my neck out in the line, although my championship picks have not been great thus far, not great at all. I don't know if anyone's been doing any calls on those. I can only see them getting to back-to-back finals at the weekend and really putting that squeeze on Glenn Ryan and his backroom team as well.
It's a good point insofar as they had a fantastic victory last night, which is worth mentioning. They knocked Dublin out of the Leinster Under-20 Championship last night, which was a result I think that might have gone largely unnoticed, but didn't in obviously Dublin GA circle, certainly around me. We had a lad playing with Dublin and he's good, but their better team won. And they came again with such a championship fervor. The Leinster final this year has actually been contested between Louth and Meath, which I think is a big boost for football in Leinster, but particularly in relation to Louth. There seems to be a lot of good things happening in the county. You were involved as a GPO, I think, up around that area. We were more Meath, obviously, but you'd have a familiarity around there, Ryan. There's some good work going on the ground.
Yeah, there was actually down in Stamullen at the time with St. Pat's. And, you know, actually, I've seen a number, I think three maybe St. Pat's lads as well involved in that Meath setup as well. So it's great to see for a brilliant club as well. But again, you see some of the facilities and some of the clubs down there, like to look and talk about St. Pat's just alone. It looked like you were going into a Premiership, you know, academy, you know, with their setup and, you know, two unbelievable pitches. And then there was an artificial pitch, a massive indoor area, you know, your gym, and then like a viewing area, and there was like a coffee area and stuff as well. So, you know, to see the growth in the clubs and stuff down there, you know, that clearly obviously adds as well to what is happening on the pitch. And you know, we look at Louth and you kind of have to look at their season and put everything into perspective as well. You know, clearly, you know, they were going to have, I suppose, yeah, after, you know, Mickey Hart had moved to Derry and moved on, you know, you could see they'd done so much over the last number of years with, you know, Mickey and his backroom team. You know, it probably felt like a loss, you know, as well in terms of, you know, how suddenly and how everything kind of happened and prevailed at the time. So it takes players a bit of time, you know, when it comes to, adapting to new changes, new processes. And I know, listen, you know, they would have formed really good relationships and, you know, they were and had been on the ascendancy for a number of seasons as well. So, you know, for them to then recover probably mid-league and hit a bit of a rich vein of form then, and to see them now, I suppose, starting to settle, you know, and probably, they'd adapt a number of times, you know, really kind of, understand what Ger and his backroom team are bringing. You know, that's something that we probably didn't look at and we didn't take into consideration when we were analysing the, you know, their league campaign as well. So, it's of massive credit, you know, that obviously that happened last night as well. And that underage work has gone on in both counties. And who doesn't like to beat the Dubs, I suppose, as well?
That's true. We all enjoy that. I mean, in fairness, they have... They've got a championship victory on both teams have a championship win on the belt already. Louth obviously beating Wexford and giving it a better game than maybe some people might have given them credit for at the time. And they've met already, obviously, Louth Kildare in the league in Dr. Cullen Park back in March, which Louth won 112 to 12 points, 3-point win. Possibly played in winterish football. We might have winter style conditions again this Sunday. How do you see it going? Would you stick with Louth?
I would I would favour Louth. I believe, Kildare possibly are in a bit of a transition just overall. I know we talked about even Kevin Flynn and stuff earlier on, you know, some of those players have had a lot of kind of seasons in the legs as well. And, you know, it's been a tough season for them. Again, I just think there's too much up front. And we mentioned some of those players, you know, with Downey and Keenan and Mulroy. And I just think...
Ryan Burns is playing great football as well.
Yeah, and they have hit a rich vein of form over the number of weeks. So for me, I can only really see Louth, you know, winning this game. And getting two consecutive finals. And let's hope. Well, I'm kind of presumptuous here that you know, if Dublin, should Dublin get through, which they probably should, that we can see a repeat and probably a better final than obviously what we had seen last year as well.
I think they're going for back-to-back Leinster finals for the first time in 50, 60 years. I think Colin Keyes had a stat the other day. So, look, I don't know if we need to get into Dublin awfully all that much because... there's nothing that you're going to be able to say about this game in the context of this fixture that we haven't said 100 million times before. Dublin are going to win the game comfortably. And They'll be heading for a Leinster final. I suppose, look, it's just really everything goes into that Kildare-Louth game, and let's see how that plays out. But should be a reasonably good weekend of football. Looking forward to it to a certain extent, if we can keep our nerves in check, given what's happening in Parkyqueeve on Sunday. But looking forward to it, and we'll be back again next Monday to review it all. Hopefully Jackie's back in the chair and take the pressure off. Until then, adios.
There's the whistle, it's over.